Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, January 4th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Happy New Year, Alex.
Thank you very much, Graham.
Yeah, best wishes for 2021. I guess I would also like to extend Happy New Year wishes to all of our listeners. And, you know, 21 is like a lucky number in some cultures, so perhaps we have good things to look forward to this year. I don't know.
Let's hope so. Fingers crossed. We need to get these vaccines out and get over this pandemic. Yes.
Yeah, that'll be a huge, just that alone would be enough for me to make 2021 terrific. So I also was thinking about New Year's resolutions, and you know, I had a couple of things that I would love to do this year with the podcast. And one of them is I'd love for more people to learn about the podcast and hear it. And that's why we're always bugging our listeners to rate and review. But I also think it'd be cool to introduce some new elements to the podcast. So I was thinking about whether or not people who are featured on Wiretaps would want to call in later in the season once they have the results. And we could kind of find out whether we gave them good advice or bad advice. And, you know, even something silly, like even if people want to record questions for us using the voice memos app on their phone and email them our way, like we could start to, you know, work in some live questions or sort of pseudo live questions onto the podcast. So I have a lot of things I want to do this year with the podcast. I don't know if you have any resolutions that you've been thinking about or not.
I'm just reading more. Yeah, I actually over the it's not that it shouldn't be related to the podcast, but it's been nice over the last week or two having a bit of a break from work and reading novels. Graham, you'd be proud of me.
Oh wow! Yeah. You mean you read something that was actually fictional?
I read a book called My Sister is a Serial Killer.
Wow!
How about that? That is fantastic. And I'm currently actually reading. I think it's actually autobiographical, but it just won the Booker Prize. Shuggy Bain, very good. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Good. So those are your picks for. It sounds like we can give out some book recommendations.
Yes.
I will come ready next week with a couple too, because I've been enjoying some of the books I've read recently. So, but I guess without further ado, what's been going on the MBA admissions front? Because I know, you know, with the holiday and stuff last week, again quiet, but things are about to get incredibly busy, right?
Yeah, I mean, starting today, we have 19 of the schools we cover, actually 18 of the schools we cover, plus the consortium have round two deadlines this week. So there'll be plenty of folks who may be listening to this that are fine-tuning those applications round two to get them sent in. So it's going to be a pretty frenetic few days for a lot of folks. There'll be more deadlines the following week, and then things all quieten down until we hit that interview invite piece. But round one is in the bag. Round two is absolutely kicking off.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, if someone's listening to this podcast and has their apps due this week, you know, I kind of want to nudge them here. Get going, you know, get it in, because they're all due in the next week or so. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Alex, is what do you think about MIT and Sloan, you know, with their second round deadline on January 19th? I mean, they're literally like a full week after all the main deadlines. Do you think that's a smart move, a dumb move? Like, why do they do that?
Well, it's a traditional move on the part of Sloan. I mean, I don't remember the last time that I saw a deadline from Sloan being right in the thick of their peers. Typically, they do tend to have a deadline 1 or 2 weeks after many of their peers. I think it's a good move. I don't think it necessarily attracts additional candidates, but it gives their candidates a little bit more time to make sure that they present themselves most effectively, rather than having to juggle that, you know, doing that with Harvard and Wharton and a couple of others that they would consider peers. They can, you know, their candidates can take a deep breath after submitting those apps, regroup, and then submit their Sloan app. Fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's smart. And I think that it's always struck me that, you know, all the schools kind of have all their deadlines like lumped on top of each other. It just doesn't seem like a great idea. Although I recognize that they're coming back from break and they want to have apps to read. Yeah. So they want them to come in ASAP. It's just an interesting quandary, you know, in terms of the timing.
Yeah, this timing has been consistent for 20 years, Graham. I mean, I know. Since I first was you know, working at Warden, yeah, January 1st or whatever the first Monday is in January, open the floodgates for schools having those round two deadlines. It's what we would call in marketing terms, very product focused. You know, it's focused on us and how we run our business rather than market focused and looking at the from a candidate's perspective. But, you know, we teach marketing. We don't actually do it particularly well sometimes.
Yes, fair. Well said. I think that, it just is interesting because you talked about how MIT's candidates maybe have a little extra time. I also think that what happens is, you know, many candidates, when they start the process, they have like 8 schools on their list. Then they start applying and they realize, okay, I'm only going to apply to 6, you know, or 5. And then they actually start writing those applications and they realize, oh my God, I don't have time to do the 5 or 6 that I targeted. So I'm going to do 4 or 5. And I feel like MIT's shielding themselves from that last bit of drop off. I bet there are people who, you know, just opt not to apply somewhere because the deadlines overlap and they end up, you know, short on time. So we'll see.
Similarly, they might say, well, I can't do Kellogg, but I'll switch it to MIT because I want to get another M7 program in my mix. So you make a very good point there.
Yeah, fair enough. So let's move on and talk about the wiretaps candidates for this week. But I did want to mention over on the website at clearadmit.com, we've run a couple of real humans pieces, one on Yale SOM and one on Cambridge Judge. We also profiled the Harvard Business School Employment Report, which was a good read. And, you know, we're still looking for everyone to share their round one results via DecisionWire, especially if you don't even know where you're going to go. We're happy to see those posts and we can then analyze them in the podcast, which is good fun. And then I have a little bit of bad news, Alex. You know, we had asked before Christmas, I guess, we had asked for some reviews in our Christmas stockings. And I got to say, we got coal. Like there were no reviews that came in over the last week or so. But I'm hoping everyone's kind of just busy with their applications and maybe they'll throw us one.
I think all 5 of our listeners have already reviewed us, Graham.
Yeah, you're probably right. All right, so without further ado, though, you've picked out 2 ApplyWire entries for this week and 1 DecisionWire. So let's start with Wiretaps candidate number 1. So this is an ApplyWire entry. This person is looking to start business school next fall. They've got 7 schools on their target list, and those schools are Cambridge, Carnegie Mellon, Harvard, LBS, MIT, Oxford, and Booth, so a very international kind of list here, straddling Europe and the U.S. They've been working in tech consulting and product management, also a little bit of marketing, and they want to get into consulting and maybe tech after business school. It sounds like consulting will be that first step, and they've got Accenture, BCG, and McKinsey on the target list. GMAT score is a 670. GPA 3.93. They've been working for 8 years, and this person's located in Egypt, which is not a country that we see a lot of MBA applicants from, so very interesting. And they've had a big focus on HR tech. That's really the industry that they've been working in for the last several years. And they're, you know, looking to go to business school in the fall. And there was some good dialogue on the site, in terms of like what's good about their candidacy and what's not. But I'll throw it over to you, Alex. What do you make of this candidacy? And did you see many candidates coming from Egypt when you were working at Wharton?
Yeah, no. I mean, quite honestly, I think you're bang on in terms of geographic diversity. This person definitely hits that bucket. I'd say this candidate has some real great aspects to their candidacy. In terms of the type of work experience that they've had, no doubt the impact that they've had, a little bit of variety also in the sort of HR tech space. So frankly, a lot to like there. The fact that they're, you know, come from Egypt sort of adds to it. Don't know that we really probe them about their sort of activities outside of work, so that might be interesting to learn a bit more of that. Their GPA, obviously outstanding. Just so much to like here, Graham. This 670 on the GMAT is definitely the anchor that, again, sort of weighs down the overall candidacy. We've talked about this on several occasions on Wiretaps. When you have an outlier in your profile that's clearly weaker than everything else, that becomes the most important element of your candidacy. So the question for this candidate is, will they, you know, is this 670 their best score? Frankly, the answer is no in this candidate's case. They said they did plenty of practice stuff. They were getting much better results. So it does look like if they retook the test, they would get a score that's more reflective of the rest of their candidacy. If they could do that, they'd be an outstanding candidate, I think, Graham.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for our listeners kind of keeping score at home, I think looking at this profile, you probably knew that Alex and I were going to say the 670 is the weakest link. There were two things, though, that I thought were important to discuss on this one, and that's why we've, you know, featured this candidate. One for me is, you know, this candidate asked, like, can you submit a GMAT score after you apply? You know, is that allowed? And I know we keep talking about that. We've actually mentioned it a couple of times on recent episodes that, oh, go and retake the test and submit it, at a later date. And so the answer is yes, although, as you pointed out in your comments, Alex, it's not a guarantee that the school will accept a new score. It really varies from school to school, nor is it a guarantee that you'll get it in time, right? Because they're making decisions about whether to interview you. And so ideally you get, you let them know that a score is forthcoming and you get it in as quickly as you can. But I mean, did you see scores coming in after the fact when you were reading files? And like, what was your timing on that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I worked at Wharton several years ago now, so the process can clearly have changed a little bit. But my sense is, even the top schools, they're always going to be open to a better score. Because at the end of the day, you know, they're going to publish their average test scores and various other things as part of their incoming profile. And if you can get the test score in, the additional test score in, before decisions are made whether to interview someone or not, I think you do run the risk, one, of the score not actually making it to your file because it's not guaranteed it actually finds the right spot. And secondly, obviously, the school ignoring it. But there's no negative to submitting an additional score is what I should say. And there's a potential massive positive. And I would say that, you know, some of the schools on this candidates list, there is quite a sort of varied list of schools in terms of different tiers and so on and so forth. Some of those schools will absolutely be thrilled to see a better score because they'll love the rest of this profile. So I would say absolutely do it. Get those apps in this week. You're going to be incredibly busy. I think of all the schools that they have listed, maybe Judge's deadline is not this week, but the next week. But maybe even Tepper, actually. But Harvard, LBS, Saeed and Booth, I'm pretty sure they're all this week. And actually, they do have Sloan listed, so they could actually retake the test twice and probably still get it in time for Sloan. I'm joking. That's definitely not the case. But yeah, they, at the end of the day, they reckon that they can do better. Get it scheduled, but try to get it scheduled before those interview invites get released.
Yeah, and then the only other point I wanted to make on this candidate is they talked about not only they have kind of interesting goals, they want to do consulting and then get back and into this sort of HR tech kind of space, but they made an explicit point to mention an interest in improving the level of competitiveness and, I mean, essentially the economy in Egypt. Yeah. And that's something that I think, you know, if you're a candidate from an underrepresented region of the world, it's obviously noble to talk about something like that. I think, you know, admissions readers are compelled by that. But I think also there's something else going on, which is even the very top schools would love to build out their alumni networks in these lesser represented regions. And so, you know, I'm sure, you know, a Harvard admissions reader is saying, wow, you know, is this person going to be a really well-known alum in Egypt and really growing that market for us? So I think there are a number of reasons why that kind of a long-term career goal can be really compelling. Yeah. Anyway, I think everything lines up here. It'd be great if they could improve the score. I will say I don't count them out for getting in to some of the schools on their list with this score. So they may very well get in. So we'll see what happens, but best of luck to them. Anything else on this one for you, Alex?
Yeah, just back to the goals. There are four things about goals, long-term goals. They want to be realistic. And in this candidate's case, they might well be realistic. They want to be ambitious. So there's sometimes a tension between realism and ambition. But in this case, they're ambitious. They want to be impactful, and in this case, they're impactful. And there's a fourth, and I just don't remember what that is. But I mean, if you've got realistic, ambitious, and impactful goals, Graham, and I think that goes a long way. And like you say, that does bode very well for this candidate. Bode very well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good advice. I always think of goals. I think of them through two lenses. Like, you know, there's sort of feasibility of the goal. Mm. Like, is it kind of likely to be able to do it? And then is the kind of you know, is it yeah, like you're saying, compelling and you know, interesting. So there are a lot of ways to look at it. But again, best of luck to this candidate.
And later in the show, we'll talk about an alum who has done extremely well from a school.
Yes.
and absolutely ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So let's move on though and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person is applying to 7 schools, also looking to start this coming fall. The schools on their list are Columbia, Cornell, Duke, Michigan, Kellogg, NYU, and UNC. They've been working in public relations, and they specify in the notes that they're basically a public relations account executive in Miami, and that their clients have been large international hospitality firms like Hilton and, you know, cruise lines and things like that. So that's their job. They've been doing that for 4 years. GRE score, a whopping 333, and a GPA of 3.59. Again, they're located in Miami. And they did have a fairly qualitative undergraduate experience, so they bolstered that with not only an amazing 165 quant on the GRE, but also an A in a course at Cal Berkeley's Extension School, which is a kind of math for management. It's kind of a pre-MBA online course. So very active in their community, interesting candidacy, but one of the things that you discussed with them in the comments on the website was how COVID maybe has impacted. So why don't you talk about that and tell me what you think of this candidate and their odds at this, you know, this list of schools.
Yeah, we chatted before we came on air about this very, very point, because a lot of candidates this season when they're applying and next season when they're applying are going to have to deal with how COVID impacted their career trajectory and their opportunities, in terms of building their profile coming into the MBA. And again, we have mentioned this a couple of times on Wiretaps thus far. And as we talked about this before we came on air, Graham, you had a 180 degree different point of view to me in terms of this particular candidate situation, which I thought was quite interesting. But my point was maybe their work has sort of dried up because of COVID-19, and therefore they're having to sort of, I'm not saying pivot necessarily, because obviously they're remaining within the industry. They're just going to go get their MBA and do something slightly different. But your point of view was actually maybe they had just become incredibly more busy because of COVID-19, having to deal with more sort of crisis management in terms of the hotel, the hospitality and whatever industry. But whichever of us is correct, and I can absolutely see it blowing either way, it's important for all candidates that are impacted by COVID-19, which is going to be quite a few in the pool this season, well, a lot in the pool this season, to be very transparent, very upfront in terms of how COVID-19 has impacted their opportunities and how they've dealt with those opportunities. I think that also becomes a real important point, because obviously to a large extent, ADCOM is looking at the sort of the character of the candidate. So oftentimes it's how you deal with adverse situations that really helps illuminate the character of the candidate. So that all said, there's definitely a lot to like here, Graham, in terms of this particular candidate. Like you say, the numbers, the GRE, they've even, you know, done some really cool additional stuff to shore up the quant side, even though they're clearly intelligent. Anyway, in that regard, I also like their community involvement in terms of, you know, basketball stuff or whatever they're doing, coaching and commentating or whatever it is. So this does seem like a really good dude, and again, sort of passes the test that I always think about when I'm thinking of an MBA candidate. Do I want to sit down and have a cup of coffee or have a beer with this person? And I reckon I probably would, and they would entertain me well. So I think there's a lot to like here. Their school choice is Not overly ambitious, I don't think. They've got some of the right schools. Again, before we came on air, Graham, you talked about Cornell Johnson in terms of really fitting into their wheelhouse, and they're right there. So, yeah, I think a really good candidate here, Graham.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think great advice about COVID, you know, whether your, you know, job is in jeopardy or the company's in a crisis because of it, or whether there's been an opportunity and you've been working your butt off, like it's still interesting to discuss and it'll need to be discussed. I think this person ticks a lot of the boxes. I mean, you know, they come from an unusual background with the PR stuff, and sometimes that could be a liability on the quant side, but I feel like, you know, they've nailed that because of the GRE and the extra coursework they've pursued. So, yeah, I feel like they're going to get into the schools on their list, assuming they execute in the application process. And, you know, you were alluding to this, but we were talking about like which schools are maybe best positioned for marketing and brand management in the hospitality sector. And it makes a lot of sense to me that they have Cornell with the, you know, probably the world's best hotel management school attached to the business school. So there's probably a lot of opportunity to do some cross-listed coursework there. Kellogg comes to mind. That's on their list. The New York schools, because of the proximity, you know, to hospitality stuff. So I think it makes sense. Wharton is not on their list. I would have maybe thought about Wharton as another kind of M7 to go after. But again, this person's got a nice list and should do well in the process. And I wish them the best of luck. Anything else that you had on this one?
No, I think this is actually a very, potentially very strong candidate, pretty much all around. And wish them the best of luck.
Yeah, appreciate their posting. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a DecisionWire entry. The candidate in question applied to Berkeley, Booth, Duke, Kellogg, and UCLA. And they ended up getting into Duke with a $40,000 scholarship, Kellogg with no scholarship dollars, and UCLA Anderson with $100,000. They were not accepted at Berkeley or Booth. And so they're kind of debating now. They want to work in tech after business school, and the companies on their list are Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Oracle, and they also tick the other box. So they have probably a broad list of tech companies. They had scored a 710 on the GMAT and had a 3.8 GPA. This candidate is European based, presumably is European, but it's hard to know because they didn't specify. And in the notes, they said, "I'm really torn between these offers. I want to do product management in tech post-MBA, and UCLA with scholarship and networking in LA and California sounds really tempting, but I'm afraid to miss an opportunity to go to a great M7 school with great culture and also tech focus." Presumably they're referring to Kellogg there. And then they just ask any suggestions, and they mention that location is not critical after business school since they expect to go through big tech for recruiting. I guess they just mean, you know, they're going to land somewhere and they're not too fussed about it. They just want to work in big tech. So what do you make of this, Alex?
Yeah, no, I think this is sort of a quite a common issue in terms of, you know, where candidates get their offers. We've already featured a couple of DecisionWire candidates, and they have sort of a similar dilemma. Take the money at a tier that's slightly lower than another tier where they don't have a financial offer. So Kellogg generally sits in a tier above both Duke and UCLA Anderson. And if we want to get really sort of nitpicky, we might argue that Duke sits slightly above Anderson within the same tier, if that makes any sense at all. But I would argue that is actually the case. And the money reflects that. Anderson's offering 100K versus Duke's slightly lower offer. And this sort of, you know, they want to recruit, they want to go into sort of big tech or whatever. They're going to get those opportunities from all three programs, I think, Graham. I think that's quite fair to say. I would argue that if they go to Anderson, take the bigger offer, they're probably going to be wanting to recruit quite regionally from Anderson. Like if they want to work in LA, or have an inclination of working in LA, Southern California, or even, you know, potentially up into Northern California, Anderson is probably a great opportunity, given the set of opportunity. But then you would make the other argument. Actually, Kellogg gives you much more freedom of geography and location. So if you can stomach the 100K, Kellogg probably gives you a bit more opportunity and mobility later on. And as you pointed out before we came on air, they're probably European. If they're planning to go back into Europe post-MBA at some point, maybe the Kellogg opportunities become much more sort of impactful. So that's my initial sense.
Yeah, and I think for me, there were two things playing out here, aside from the ranking stuff and the money. Like, one is this issue around geography, and if this person does eventually, let's just imagine they're from France, right? I mean, it would be, if I were this person, I would do their due diligence and look and see, okay, what's the Anderson and Fuqua and Kellogg network like in France, or, you know, wherever they're located? Like, check that out, because that may end up being more important than they imagine if they want to start a business someday, or even just rise in the ranks within Europe in the tech domain, right? So that could be important. The other thing I would look into is just the fit. You know, these programs are different. I mean, you know, UCLA is, it's an urban setting. It's a great vibe with everything that's happening tech-wise and even entertainment-wise in LA. But it's a really different feel from what I would call more suburban campuses in both Duke and Kellogg. You know, Kellogg is you know, right on the outskirts of Chicago, and you have all that sort of Chicago amazingness at your fingertips. But it is a proper kind of campus that's, you know, on its own. And I would also argue that because there are fewer candidates attending Kellogg and Fuqua who are from those markets than, say, candidates from LA attending UCLA, I think you get a slightly different, maybe closer-knit experience, and just a different experience in terms of like how friendships are forged. And, you know, there's a subset of people who already know the market and have friends there, and so they're not as dependent on the MBA ecosystem. So I think just looking into that and figuring out where would you be happiest, because this is, I mean, for this person, it's like going to be a 2-year kind of American experience. What are they looking for in that as well? So yeah, those were just two things on my mind. Obviously the money, you know, that's a personal thing. This candidate needs to figure out like what's their personal financial situation, and how important is 100,000 versus zero at Kellogg or versus 40 at Duke. Now you did mention something that I thought was interesting, and I'll let you share it, but you pointed out that you alluded to someone who graduated from Duke that has had some success in the tech domain. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, just back to this idea of different tiers and different opportunities, I think we would be quite frank and say, you know, Kellogg is in a higher tier than Duke and Anderson, or I should say Fuqua and Anderson and Kellogg, if I'm talking about the business school names. So Kellogg's in the higher tier. What does that mean? It means that Kellogg provides more access to opportunities than Duke or Anderson. Does that mean Kellogg is the only best opportunity for everybody? I mean, and the point being, you know, Tim Cook, who leads Apple, is probably, you know, I don't know if Apple's the most expensive or biggest company in the world right now on stock market valuation. I think Tesla might have overtaken it, which boggles my mind.
It's ridiculous.
In terms of whatever, right? But I mean, Apple's extremely successful. Tim Cook is extremely successful. Tim Cook is a graduate of Duke Fuqua. So does Tim Cook, you know, if Tim Cook had gone to Kellogg instead of Duke, would he have had better opportunities? I don't know that you can make that argument, because how can you get a better opportunity than leading Apple? So my point being, all these top programs will provide terrific opportunities at big tech, at investment banking, at top consulting. That's kind of their bread and butter. Does Kellogg provide you more access to that over Duke and Anderson? Yes, they do. But does that limit your opportunity if you end up going to Duke? Well, not according to Tim Cook. So there's a little bit of, you know, it's interesting, right? You can still scale the heights of the very top companies going to a top, what we would consider a top 16 program versus an M7 program. So just bear that in mind. I'm not saying that if you go to Duke, that you can, you know, you could speed dial Tim Cook and get his advice all the time, and he'll provide you opportunities directly in Apple. But the point is, you can go to Duke and you can lead Apple.
Yeah, well said. And I think that's something that we lose sight of, and maybe even our listeners lose sight of from time to time, because you can really get into the different tiering. And but frankly, all the schools that we talk about routinely on this podcast are pretty amazing MBA programs, and you can't really go wrong. So Alex, you know, I know that some of our listeners were probably enjoying the podcast and thinking, oh, thank God I get a break from writing essays and getting these round two apps in. But sadly, we've come to the end of this episode, and people need to get back to work writing their writing their essays. Or if they're sitting back, you know, they can wait for results. And as you mentioned, interview invitations will probably start to trickle out in, you know, late January is my guess, as schools start to read through the files. But thanks for picking these out, Alex. And again, best wishes for a happy 2021 to you and to all of our listeners. But yeah, thanks so much, Alex.
Yeah, brilliant. Happy New Year, Graham. Happy New Year, everybody. Stay safe. We are seeing the light at the end of the tunnel with this pandemic, but clearly we've got a long way to go. We're locking down, I'm sure, further in the UK to deal with some variants of the pandemic. So anyway, the point is, stay safe, everyone. Happy New Year, and best of luck those finalising their round two applications, and look forward to catching up again next week, Graham.
Yes, me too. See you next week, everyone.